Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast Best of Edition for Friday, August 3rd, 2018. Today we go back to one of my most surprisingly favorite interviews, and that was an interview with Hardcore Bob Holly. He was an unexpectedly awesome guest. I get surprised sometimes with interviews over the years where I don't necessarily have high expectations for how open someone's going to be. And Hardcore Bob Holly had a bit of a reputation for being a bit of a hard ass in WWE, and maybe I had low expectations. But I read his book, The Hardcore Truth, and I thought, this is a really interesting kind of counter perspective to a lot of narrative that had been put out there by other wrestlers. So he came back for a second interview on August 9th, 2013, so almost 5 years ago. And we took live calls, we answered email questions on a range of topics, including his stance that Trish Stratus and Lita are overrated. Also details on how wrestlers' court worked, thoughts on Kurt Angle's DWI arrest and checking into treatment, some heavy praise for Shawn Michaels and Triple H's great workers, and what he has to say to his critics who are skeptical of his portraying himself as a nice guy these days. Like, there were people who knew about Bob's rap and just thought, there's no way that this could be authentic, because it's like he has this aw shucks, you know, like affable personality, and people are like, who is this guy based on what we heard? So he addressed that. And then also the VIP exclusive after show. This was not available on the PW Torch Livecast 5 years ago. Only VIP members got to hear this, and he talked about Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage as in-ring workers and how opposite they were behind the scenes, which is interesting. Also, how wrestling Ric Flair was so smooth. And he also talked about Playboy Buddy Rose, a highly underrated worker of his era. So all kinds of great stuff in this one. You're going to want to listen. So settle in and enjoy. It's about 78 minutes total. Really good stuff from Hardcore Bob Holly.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter since 1987, and PWTorch.com, the website, since 1999, the PW Torch app since 2009, and also host of the PW Torch Livecast for 3.5 years plus and counting. And I'm joined today by Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. Hello, Bruce.
Doing fine, Wade. How are you feeling?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. I felt better. It's been one of those weeks where I felt kind of cruddy, and my throat's a little bit sore still and kind of raw. So if people hear me sounding like Greg Brady on the voice-changing episode for the fans, our listeners who are over the age of 35 and know that show, please – or no, it wasn't Greg. It was Peter. Please forgive me for that. Because it is Friday, it is Interview Friday, and we are very pleased to bring back for a second appearance on the show one of our more popular – guests from just a few months ago. I think it was in May when they made his first appearance on the show, and that is Hardcore Bob Holly. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Wade. I sure do appreciate it. Hey, you know what? It's actually a privilege to be on for a second time, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
And just so you know, Bob and Bruce, I'm going to tell you that what hurts more than anything right now on my throat is laughing. So if you tell a funny joke and I don't laugh, please don't be offended. That's all. I started laughing.
I never am, Wade. I never am when I tell a funny joke and you don't laugh.
I know. Well, it just I'll basically impersonate Pat McNeil today. That's all I'll say. All right, Bob, we have lots of emails that we've gotten from people, and I was actually really pleased as they've been coming in this week since we confirmed you're going to be on the show. How many people said that they bought your book at our recommendation, some of them just in the last week since I announced you're going to be on again. And so we definitely want to have time in the hour or so that you've got to be on the show to I want to prioritize questions from people who have read your book.
Okay.
So if we have callers who are interested in calling right now, if you ask a question, you're welcome to call if you haven't read the book. But understand we might direct you to the book and move on to having Bob expand on the book. Because, I mean, it's Bruce, some people even said they got the book because, Bruce, you recommended it specifically. And I just want people to know who didn't hear the first interview, we really recommend the book. And the reason is, and Bruce, you can chime in on this when I'm done with a little short explanation here, is we've had a lot of books written by people who have been in WWE in the 90s, during the Attitude Era, and afterwards, but they were written by people who either weren't there very long or even more so, it goes through that Vince McMahon filter of not necessarily even an official book, but they're worried what Vince will think and he'll never hire him again. And Bob, in the case of Hardcore Diaries, I don't think Bob wrote it thinking, oh, I hope I have a job in WWE again. If he did, I want to talk to Bob off air about a better way to go about that politically. So
yeah,
it was a very forthright book, and I thought very honest. Bruce, you give a quick endorsement to the book, and then let's get into questions that I have and that our listeners have.
Forthright is an excellent way to describe it. Also, Bob Holly is a performer who learned the business through the nuts and bolts, and you see how he sees things, and everything's honest, but how he sees things and how he sees decisions that are made around him that affected him, that affected his professional career. It's a fascinating, entertaining book that I learned a lot from. It's one of the best wrestling books in the last several years.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Bruce, I really appreciate you guys reading it and putting it over for me because Ross Williams, the guy that wrote the book, he's the one that really gets a lot of the credit. You know, I just told my story, but he did it. He put my words on paper to where, you know, from – and I've got a lot of people that, you know, have told me this, that it feels like I'm in the room talking to them.
Absolutely.
You know, so Ross did a great job of conveying my words to paper.
And Ross wins me over because he's a master of using a semicolon, and I think it's the most underutilized punctuation in the English language, and he uses it well. So a little brownie points from there. All right, I want to start with an email question, and this comes, Bob, from Jeff Farrell from East Bethel. He goes, I really enjoyed your book, Bob. If you're a wrestling fan, this book is a must-read. My question is, in the book you talk about your relationship with Kurt Angle. Have you reached out to Kurt since his current issues? And he adds, again, fantastic book. Bob, are you up on the fact that Kurt got a DWI last week and has now checked himself into treatment?
Yes, I am. You know, me and Kurt, we really haven't kept in touch or anything like that. But, I feel for him and his family and stuff like that, and I hate that he's going through that. You know, and like I said, I really, you know, through messages here and there on Twitter, you know, that's pretty much our only communication that we have.
Yeah.
But as far as his troubles, I just, you know, and I'm being honest because, you know, I know people have issues and they have trouble getting over their issues and stuff like that. But, you know, I hope this is the third time for Kurt, and I hope he gets it straightened out because, you know, something like that, Kurt could lose his life or he could kill somebody else, you know, or kill somebody else's kids or whatever. So, you know, I just hope Kurt gets it under control this time because he really, you know, I hate to see him go through this because he's, you know, he's such a good guy too. And that's the problem. You don't want to, you know, because he's such a nice guy, a great athlete and a great asset to the business. You hate to see guys like that go through something like this. And you want him to get better. And hopefully this will do the trick for him.
Bob, two questions as a follow-up to this emailer. When how do wrestlers police themselves, or how does management police situations where somebody is clearly high on marijuana or has been drinking before a match? How often did that happen in your career, either in WWE or otherwise, and how was that policed or handled?
Usually, the boys always looked after each other when it came to stuff like that. You know, if somebody came in and, you know, you could tell they'd been drinking and they're not in their right mind or whatever, the boys will actually, you know, pull them off to the side and try to hide them and try to get them to come back to reality or such before anybody, any of the agents can see them or anything. So the boys were really good at you know, looking out after one another in situations like that, you know, and then when that did happen, you have a sit down with them and say, hey, you can't be doing that stuff, you know, because you're putting your job on the line. You're jeopardizing your career. You're jeopardizing somebody else's career, you know. And so a lot of management didn't see a lot of that stuff go on because, like I said, the boys always looked out for one another.
Are there any matches that you can remember or recall where one or both wrestlers were under the influence of drugs or alcohol where they just tried to get through the match, but you could tell they were trying to be overly careful to not hurt one another?
You know, not really. Not really. It's funny because as soon as that bell rings or that music plays, whatever they're doing, they straighten up just that quick. It's really amazing the energy you get from the crowd when you go through that curtain. So, you know, really you can't – I can't really say that I know of anybody that had any issues going to the ring where, you know, they just tried to make it through the match or whatever. But, there, you know, I can't recall of any because, like I said – everybody's such professionals, and once that music plays, it's like, wow, what happened to this guy? Just a minute ago, he wasn't talking. Now he's just, like, wide open and ready to go, you know? So, yeah, you really don't see much of that.
It's kind of a deal killer for a wrestler who would just start showing up. I mean, I would assume if somebody was just high or drunk all the time or often, that would end up really hurting their career unless they were just an elite-level draw.
Oh, absolutely. And if one of the agents, or the, I guess the producers now, but if they were to see you like that, you know, they work with you. They don't, you know, reprimand you right away. They try to get you help. They try to help you and find out what your issues are and why you're doing this and so forth, you know. So they've always been good at trying to help people instead of just throw them to the wolves and just say, hey, you know what, we're not putting up with any of that. You're out the door, you know. So they were always really good at working with people.
You wrote in your book you weren't much of a drinker. Did that hold up as time went on, or did you find yourself kind of being pulled into the after-show partying lifestyle? And if you never did or didn't very often drink socially, do you think that worked against you when it came to that, you know, that all-important after-hours bonding with people in power?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think it did because I was my own person. And when I first got with the company, you know, back in 93 – or 94, I mean, everybody, that was what you did after the shows.
Yeah.
And you went out with Undertaker, you went out with Yokozuna, you went out with those guys like that, you know, and you partied with them. And they tried to strong-arm me and telling me, hey, you have to do this in order to get over with everybody. And I went out maybe a couple times at first, and then I thought, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm not a partier. I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, hopefully my talent will dictate how far I go. I don't have to, you know, go out and party and socialize to get over, you know, to keep my job. You know, I'm not doing that. And I didn't. I did, you know, I was my own person, and I didn't let, you know, pressure from guys in the locker room saying, hey, you guys going out with us tonight, you know, they all want you there and you need to be there. And I didn't, you know, I didn't play that game at all. I was my own person, and I thought, you know what, I'm here because I love wrestling. I don't care about partying. I want to succeed in what I do. And granted, a lot of guys still succeeded and partied at the same time, more power to them, but that just wasn't my thing. I was never a partier, and I didn't feel like I needed to go party with guys just to get over with the guys in the locker room. So, you know,
against you though in retrospect?
It might have at first, but honestly, I think going back and looking at my career, I think what honestly hurt me is I felt like I could have done more. Maybe more appearances here and there and just, you know, putting myself out there and, you know, saying, hey, on my days off, do you need me to go somewhere to do something or whatever? You know, I think, you know, because you look at John Cena and – granted, this guy's not, he's not a good wrestler. He's not a good athlete. He's clumsy in the ring, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But he's the hardest working guy in WWE. He, for so many years, he wouldn't take a day off. And granted, it helped because he was single, too. But, you know, he was doing appearances constantly, doing everything they asked him to do. Just, you know, And he would stay on the road for 30 straight days without a day off, you know, doing appearances and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think in retrospect, I think I could have, you know, offered myself out a little bit more. But, you know, when it comes time to your days off and stuff, you want to be with your family. So it was kind of, you know, a tug of war situation there. And I really think that's what kind of maybe hurt me in a sense, to where maybe I could have went further if I would have done a little bit more.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling. This week, with the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
VIP member Tom from the UK says, could Bob talk a little bit about Wrestler's Court, how it worked, what it was used for? Who are the main characters involved and any of the stories that spring to mind? I'll read a second question, too. You can take them in either order. My second question is, as someone who knows The Undertaker as Mark Calloway rather than just The Undertaker, what does Bob see for Taker after he has wrestled his last match? A quiet life on the ranch, an on-screen role, working as an agent behind the scenes? What's Undertaker going to do after he retires from the ring? Many thanks, as always.
I honestly think – I don't know if Taker's going to completely retire from wrestling. I think he's just going to take it easy on the ranch and just enjoy the rest of his life. And I think he's always going to have some kind of connection with WWE. You know, I think he'll always be a part of the company, you know, regardless if he wrestles anymore or not.
Do you see him as becoming like a full-time agent or wanting to be involved full-time, or someone who's kind of an ambassador and just makes an appearance now and then?
I think it's just an ambassador. I don't think he wants to be full-time as an agent or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think he'll just be an ambassador to come in, you know, just hit and miss here and there, and that's it. Because he's had a really long career and a great career, and I think it's time for him to take it easy and enjoy the fruits of his labor, you know. So, and I just honestly think that's what he'll probably do. You know, I don't know, but just assuming that's probably he'll just be an ambassador.
Let me add to the Wrestler Court question, Bob, because Teddy Biazi was on the show a few weeks ago and denied knowing anything about Wrestler's Court.
He's lying. He knows all about Wrestler's Court.
That's what I thought. I was like, because you wrote about it in your book. So, but it was funny. I wasn't sure if he was playing dumb or that was after he was around. So,
I thought he was a born-again Christian. I thought he was supposed to tell the truth.
Well, now we know how much of a dark, deep old-timer Teddy Biasi is when it comes to keeping secrets about Wrestler's Court.
Yeah. Wrestler's Court, it's just, you know, if somebody does something to generate heat in the locker room and the agents, producers, management, they don't have anything to do with it. They stay out of it. And it's just it's a rib amongst the boys in the locker room. And basically what happens is, you know, somebody does something to upset somebody, you know, and just you're going against the, you know, locker room etiquette. So what happens is, it's a process because it takes, you know, a few weeks to get everybody involved. And what happens is we plan like a pay-per-view and say, hey, we're going to have Wrestler's Court on this pay-per-view, but nobody knows who it's going to be. So everybody goes in, like, say, catering room, and they ask everybody to leave, all agents and everybody. I mean, none of the agents are allowed in there. And so everybody goes in there, and Taker's the judge. He was always the judge. Bradshaw and Ron Simmons were the Bradshaw was the prosecuting attorney, and Ron was the defense attorney, and which, you know, Ron didn't do a very good job of defending the guy in question. So, but that's basically what it is. And then restitution is, you know, they buy Taker a fifth of Jack or whatever he wants, and then they buy
bribing the judge is encouraged.
What's that?
Bribing the judge is encouraged.
Yes, it is, and that usually works, especially with Bradshaw. You know, a case of beer goes a long way with them. So that's basically it in a nutshell. You know, I talk about it a little bit in my book, but you know, it's just a, you know, something amongst the boys, just to, you know, have a little fun, break the monotony of being on the road so much.
And we reported on it in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter whenever we heard about it in the 90s and 2000s. Is it something that faded away over time? And kind of part one and part two, how many wrestler courts did you attend?
First part of your question, I've probably been in maybe four or five wrestlers' courts. And nowadays, they don't do that because, you know, actually, ever since the company went public, I don't recall any more wrestlers' courts after that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, now it's an environment where, you know, they're a public company, so everybody is supposed to be, you know, so, you know, professional or whatever you have it. Because I just don't do well in corporate world, so... But, yeah, and so because there's too many people can, you know, file lawsuits left and right now for anything. You know, you can have a guy in wrestler's court, and if he doesn't play the game or doesn't really like it and is really humiliated over it, you know, he could sue the company, you know. So they just don't do that anymore for, you know, and I really think that's why, because, you just really can't mess with people anymore.
Well, there's a like great story in your book because, you know, we're here to help sell your book because we – recommend your book. Great story with Road Warrior Hawk and Mick Foley and a few other top people, but mostly Hawk blowing a gasket over something Mick Foley did that led to Foley going to wrestler court. And
it actually never happened, because Al Snow went to Mick and said, "Hey, look, we're going to wrestler's court and we are going to lose." And Mick's such a tightwad, he didn't want to fork over any money.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good story, but and Hawk actually, he went a little too far with it because, I mean, he literally wanted to kill Mick Foley, and I was like, whoa, wait a second now, just take it easy. You know, but, you know, and because Hawk is all about sticking up for the boys and doing the right thing, you know, and so forth. But, yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this guy's really angry. So
I also love the note about Edge and Christian ending up in wrestler's court because they were buying gifts for Brian Gewirtz. They were buying him science action figures. So if you wonder why Edge and Christian got their push, well, no, I'm kidding. I'm sure they deserve their push, but it's a funny story.
Yeah, it is a funny story. Because I walked around the corner and I saw them handing Brian, you know, these action figures, and I'm like, okay. I'm sitting there putting two and two together, and it's like, okay, Brian writes for them, and they get along really well, and they're – you know, and it's in our contract where, you know, you're not supposed to give gifts to the writers or anything. You're not supposed to take them out to dinner or anything, you know. So, but yeah, that was a funny story. But
if you're just joining us, this is PW Torch Livecast. It is Interview Friday. Bob Holly, Hardcore Holly, is our guest, and he is here for an hour live and a few minutes after that for VIP members. If you've got a question, we invite your phone call, 646-721-9828, 646-721-9828. You can also email a question right now, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. If you did not hear Bob Holly's first interview, I believe it was on the May 31st edition of the PW Torch Livecast. You can check that out also. We recommend it. It has been highly praised. His book, Hardcore Diaries, available at an online bookstore, ebook store, or hard copy bookstore. Wherever you shop for books, look for it. Enter Bob Holly as the author, or Hardcore Holly, or Hardcore Diaries as, is that right? Hardcore Diaries, right? The Hardcore Truth. Mick Foley here. Bruce, you gave me a hard time. Bruce Mitchell's still there. Bruce gave me a hard time for not knowing the name of the book off the top of my head, and that's why I didn't say it, because I was afraid I was going to say it wrong, and here I'm saying it wrong. The Hardcore Truth. The Hardcore Truth.
I was sitting here, I was going, what is he talking about now? Is he talking about my book, or is he talking about something else here? I'm like, maybe he's going in a segue into something else right now. And so I didn't say anything. I was like, okay.
Well, we just talked about Mick Foley, so I'm going to give myself a little, it's just, but anyway, it's a Hardcore Truth by Bob Holly.
I've learned to interrupt Wade when these things come up. It's something that you have to do. Just interrupt him. Just go right for it.
Yeah.
Hey. Speaking of Mick Foley, I don't mean to cut you guys off, but I went to one of his comedy shows and here in Dubuque, Iowa. And let me tell you something. He is good. He really is. And if anybody ever gets a chance, an opportunity to go to one of his shows, you need to go because, you know, I was very skeptical at first. I'm like, okay, you know, I've been around Mick, you know, a lot of years and stuff like that, and I've never known him to be a comedian. But honestly, he is funny. If anybody out there is a huge fan of him, whether you are or aren't, go check him out because Mick is a funny guy. His delivery is awesome. It's good. Everybody needs to check him out.
Very cool. I appreciate the endorsement. Bruce, anything you want to add to the discussion so far? Should we go to a phone call or email?
Can I have a phone call or email? Let's keep rolling.
Yeah, let's keep rolling. All right, sounds good. Let's go ahead and go to a phone call, and we'll begin with area code 865. 865, you're on with Bob Holly. Please state your name and where you're from.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Stephen from Tennessee.
Hey, Stephen. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Hey. I'm doing well, Mr. Holly. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I appreciate it. I was unable to catch the last little bit. The first time you were on the show here, Mr. Holly, you guys talked about it. I apologize. But one of the memories that etched into my head from your last little bit of run in WWE was obviously your match, I believe it was with Rob Van Dam, where you suplexed the table and the famous scene of your back being cut open from the table shark and all that stuff. And as well as also, you're known, in my head, you're more synonymous with the hardcore title than anybody else that ever held that belt. And so I just kind of wanted to get your view of, and first of all, I want to say thank you for putting your body through that for our entertainment, but also wanted to get your view of kind of how the hardcore style evolved from the hardcore style being, you know, maybe a few more aggressive moves, but now it was tons of more weapons being used, and now we're seeing the toll that it's taken on people's bodies now, and then as well as sometimes people wanting for that to be revived in some way or form or fashion. I just kind of wanted to get your view on that.
Yeah. Well, when they first started the whole hardcore division, I really never thought anything of it. And then when they started having me do it, it was a perfect fit for me. So, you know, I really enjoyed that. And the hardcore title had a really good deal. I thought they always had a really good thing with that because that was one of the more popular type of matches that people got into. And I think what happened is, you know, it just kind of got oversaturated a little bit with the 24-hour deal and stuff like that. And then a lot of the matches, as time goes by, our TV matches, you know, your individual matches that you have on TV kept getting cut shorter and shorter and shorter. So, you know, it's hard to tell a story using weapons and stuff like that, you know, in a 5 or 6 minute match. And so I think it just kind of faded away, you know, because it just got to the point where it's just really redundant and people just weren't into it like they were, you know, and honestly, I don't know why. I'm just speculating. Maybe it was because it got to the point where, you know, they were using so much stuff, and when you use so much stuff, it doesn't really have that much meaning. And then, like Al Snow was really good at taking 3 or 4 items and making them mean something rather than use 10 items, and he was a master at that. And that's where I learned that from Al, really. But like now, there's just really no time. I honestly think there's no time on TV for the hardcore stuff because you really need at least, you know, a good 8 to 10 minutes to tell a decent story. So, and plus it did take a toll on everybody's bodies, you know, and especially because we were doing it on the road, you know, we get it on TV and then we would do it on house shows night after night. And that did take an awful big toll on everybody's body too. And I think, you know, a lot of it is, it just, it lost that, you know, that uniqueness that it once had. So I really think Vince just is uninterested in the hardcore thing anymore for whatever reason.
Very good. Appreciate the call, Stephen. Any follow-up?
Yep. No, other than that, I just appreciate you guys taking my call, and cool. You guys have a good one.
Thanks. You bet. Thanks for calling, Stephen.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, man.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
The Hardcore Truth is Bob Holly's book. Order it in a bookstore near you. Just want to get that in. Just want to get a streak going again. Right.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, and you can follow me on Twitter, too, at The Bob Holly.
Excellent. At The Bob Holly. Yep.
At The Bob Holly, yes.
You can follow me at The Wade Keller. We both
yes,
are,
you know, and I am following you. I'm stalking you, Wade.
Well, I'm flattered.
Is Bruce on Twitter?
Oh, God, that's a
long
story.
I am not on Twitter. It's a bone of contention.
What? Why is Bruce not on Twitter?
Because I see people that are on because I'm a school teacher. I see people on Twitter. They say 150 things and nobody bothers them. And then they say that one thing that gets them in trouble. And I'm trying to avoid that one thing that gets them in trouble.
Hey, Bruce. Bruce, we can barely hear you, by the way. So if you can adjust how you're talking into your phone or mic or whatever. I know you were transitioning.
Okay, all right.
But we've been trying to get Bruce on Twitter, but and Bruce only sees the bad, he doesn't see the good, and so, I've set one up for him, but he doesn't use it, let's put it that way.
I see.
We'll go to a question from Daly from Paris, France. He emailed this one in. He said, Bob, I was sold on your book during the last livecast interview you did, and I eventually bought it on Thursday. Suffice to say, it was finished in under 24 hours. I very much enjoyed it. Thank you. One of the points that I'd like you to expand upon was your thoughts on the Divas and WWE, specifically your against-the-grain opinions on Trish Stratus and Lita. Most people do nothing but sing their praises, whereas you seem to be less than enthusiastic about their work in the ring. Why is that? Is it just that you rate them against the male workers, whereas most people only compare them to the other workers in their division? Overall, any extra insight that you can offer would be most appreciated.
Honestly, Trish is not bad. Lita's not that bad, but In my opinion, they're not as good as people such as what is her name? Gail Kim. Gail Kim is, you know, to me, she set the bar for women as far as female workers. She's really good, and that's how I base people off of, because Gail Kim is so good. Gail Kim can work just like a guy, you know. She's that good, in my opinion. And, you know, a few weeks ago, her and this other girl, I'm not sure, I can't remember her name, but they had a ladder match, and it was just off the charts. It was just that good. But don't get me wrong, you know, Trish, you know, she earned her spot where she was. But from my point of view, as far as, you know, you got to be able to lead a match. You got to be, you know, and she's not that smooth, in my opinion. I mean, she's good. She had to be good where she, you know, to be where she was. But I just thought, you know, someone like Gail Kim, you know, she sets the bar for female workers. She's just, you know, and I think, you know, Trish and Lita, you know, I keep repeating myself, but, you know, Beth Phoenix is really good too. You know, she's another one that's really good. They're good, but they're not as good as Beth and Gail Kim. And I just think, you know, girls like Gail Kim should get, you know, a lot more praises for their work, because they set the bar, you know, so...
Do you know what kept Gail Kim from catching fire in WWE? She was such a standout performer in TNA. Her matches with Awesome Kong especially were so good. And then she got to WWE, and it seemed like, you know, after some vignettes and they were setting her up for a big push, it just didn't she didn't really reach that level where you look at her as a, you know, Hall of Famer like Trish, even though a lot of us thought she might become that.
Right. And see, that's another thing, you know, and that's a good question, because I think politics plays a huge part in that. you know, and you got to look at, okay, when you take a look at Lita, when Lita was with, she managed one other guy before she was with the Hardys. And she never prospered from him, but as soon as they put her with the Hardys, then people started noticing her, okay? And my point on Lita, if she was that good, she would have been noticed when she was with that first guy. But the Hardys, honestly, the Hardys made her who she was, you know? And yeah, she worked her ass off. Don't get me wrong, she worked her ass off. But the Hardys are the ones that put her on the map. And I just think it all comes down to a lot of politics with Trish Stratus, you know, and it's all who you know. That's a lot of it, you know. And granted, Trish is a very beautiful woman. She's got, you know, she's a 10 across the board, you know. So, of course, she's going to be very appealing to everybody, you know, no matter your talent. And I honestly think when it came to Gail Kim, you know, she's got the looks, she's got the talent, she's got every bit of it, she can talk. But that's the question. Why did she not make it in WWE? And I really think it's for political reasons. Because believe it or not, politics plays a huge, huge role in who goes where. You know, despite, you know, what they say. Because I read something not too long ago that somebody had wrote in WWE that if you want to make it in WWE to the top, you have to have that heart, that desire, that passion, you know, and that work ethic to make it to the top, you know, and you have to be an athlete. And as soon as I saw that, you know, I was like, okay, that's a, you know, a line of bull, because that's not the case in a lot of cases. That's not it. It's politics, you know, and as far as Gail Kim, I think politics played a huge role why she never made it big in WWE, which I think personally she should have been the top girl in WWE, hands down, you know, and I don't know. I've talked to Gail Kim a handful of times but I don't know her that well, but from her talent and her ability, I think she should have been the number one girl in WWE, honestly. And I think politics has a lot to do with it.
Do you know of anything that she did wrong, or that the perception was that she wasn't playing politics the right way, or are you just kind of saying that must be it because she deserved a push?
That, you know, I don't know, honestly, but I just because I've been there for so long and I know a lot of things, it's just politics has had to have been the only reason. Because look, if you're a professional football player, a basketball player, a baseball player, you can't sit there and tell me if someone's got all the tools, they're not going to be successful in whatever sport they play. In professional wrestling, you can have all the tools and have everything it takes to be number one, and you may not be number one. And that's the thing. It's your talent dictates how far you go in other sports.
Yeah.
In professional wrestling, your talent dictates a little bit of it, but there are other factors factored in on how far you go.
Bob, you had written in your book that Al Snow screwed up a move on Raw and management lost interest in him after that. Can sometimes it be one thing like that that's kind of the final straw that causes management to say, yeah, we've got a ceiling on him now as a mid-carder. We're not going to push him further.
It can, and that's a shame, because not everybody is going to have a great night. And that's the thing. It's like I talked about before. You can have 50 great matches, and then you have that one match that doesn't go well. They start rethinking your whole career. Okay, we might need to go a different direction with this guy because, you know, he just screwed up on live TV. Yeah. You know, and nobody's going to be perfect 100% of the time. It's just not going to happen. And like I said, you know, Al was a great talent. I think he should have went a little bit further. He could have been, you know, U.S. champion or Intercontinental champion, you know, and because that he was over. Al was over so huge, and I think that there was a reason why he didn't go no further, and it doesn't have anything to do with his talent, because he was over. He was completely over, you know, and it's, I want to go back to Gail Kim. there's a reason why she was not the number one girl in WWE. And it's damn sure not because she didn't have all the tools, you know. And I just think it's a shame because you have somebody with so much talent and can give so much to the business, and it doesn't work out for them. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were done. I was just going to go to the next call. But, no, good insight. And, that's one of the cool
things. Look at these college football players, all right? They're going to get picked by the pros because of their talent, not because they can cut good promos or they look good. You know, it's because they can play football, you know, or baseball or whatever sport they're in, you know, whatever discipline they do. You know, they're going somewhere because of their talent. WWE, yeah, you have to have a little bit of talent, but you don't have to be the best wrestler, if you know what I'm saying, to be on top.
Right.
You know, because it's entertainment, you know, and it's, you know, and I just, I don't know. The whole thing with Gail Kim, it just really bothers me because that's a perfect example of somebody has every aspect of the game and she didn't make it in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to ask, you know, the only logical answer is politics. You know, but I wasn't there, you know, that second time she came around, so I don't know how she was to deal with, if she was, you know, if she cooperated. I can't imagine her not wanting to cooperate, you know, because she's such a nice person, you know, so, you know, I honestly, that's the only thing I could point my finger to why she didn't make it in WWE.
Yeah. Very good. Bruce, anything you want to jump in with?
No, except for I just think Bob's passion about this issue. I mean, clearly, just listen carefully is what I would say.
Yeah, and see, another thing, too, you know, when this person in management had written this little thing about what it takes to make it in WWE, to be a top guy, you know, you have to have that passion, that desire, and you have to, you know, show everybody that you want it. But there was so many instances that, you know, there was always trouble in the camp with one person, you know, with certain people, but yet they kept going with that person. You know, like I talk about it in my book, there's one person I talk about that we had trouble with over in Spain, and that was a perfect example. But yet if that was somebody else, a mid-card guy or somebody else, he would have been gone just that quick. Hmm. So, you know, I go back to that. It's, you know, politics is a huge, huge part of professional wrestling, a huge, massive part of professional wrestling.
And in defending what the management said in the quote that you're talking about, I think there probably are cases where a wrestler has all the talent in the world, but management is so frustrated because they just kind of show up and expect it to be handed to them, or they don't really show that kind of passion that you said in great detail, and I think accurately, that John Cena has. And we've probably seen it with guys where, you know, guys have gotten big pushes, a Jack Swagger type. They had all the tools. And then management looks at him, or Rob Van Dam, for very different reasons, you know, very different kind of approaches to the business. And they look at him and they go, is this a guy who, if we invest in them and get them over and put them in top spots, are going to work as hard as we need somebody in that spot to work and appreciate it? And I think that's probably what management's talking about. But like what you wrote in your book, Bob, management always says you got to make your own push, and you kind of call BS on that, saying, you know, there's only so many top spots, and sometimes management doesn't want to hear your ideas, or they're not open to them, and so they say it's up to each guy to make his own push. So to me, I think the formula is a little more complicated than that member of management was saying. It's a combination of things that have to be right, including kind of luck and timing and politics and all of that. But you do have to have that drive and show management that you want to get to the top and you're willing to work hard once you get there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, but there are some cases where guys don't show that, but yet they still go with them. And that's because they see money in them. Which, you know, that's fine, but don't make statements where clearly that's not the case. You know, and that's what the point I'm trying to make is, why do they make statements like that when clearly that's not the case? You know, and like a guy, let's take John Cena, for example, okay? This guy deserves every bit of what he's got. This guy, and I said it in my book, he is the hardest working guy in WWE. He is the perfect example of a guy. He's not a great athlete, but his heart and desire was much more powerful than his athletics. You know, so, you know, he excelled because he had that heart and desire and because he worked his ass off to be number one. And that's the reason why nobody's ever knocked him off the top. And it's going to be a long time before somebody comes along and takes his spot, you know, because, like I said, I've seen a lot of people work their ass off before, but I've never seen anybody work their ass off like John has. You know, I give it to the guy, you know, and he's even told me before. He goes, I'm not a great wrestler. He said, I'm not that good. But, you know, he deserves to be there. And he acknowledges that, you know, he's not a great worker. It takes a great worker to pull it out of him to where he, you know, can turn it up. But his work ethic and his heart and desire to be number one has paid off.
A lot of times that's what it takes. Bob, do you think it, from being around John, that it bugs him that he's not better than he is, or do you think he's very content because his hard work makes up for just athletically, you know, not being at that top-tier level?
You know what? I just, don't get me wrong. John has gotten he's gotten so much better than when he was several years ago.
Yeah.
And you're going to get better when you work with top guys, when you work with guys like Randy Orton, when you work with Undertaker, you know, when you work with guys like that, Shawn Michaels, when you work with Hunter, you know, you're going to get better. That's the bottom line. There's no denying that. But your talent, you know, your God-given ability is, you know, only going to go so far. And then the rest is heart and desire. And then, you know, that's what John has got. You know, and John's got John's got what it takes to be number one, despite, you know, not being the best worker.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
You wrote that in his 2007 one-hour draw classic, or one-hour match classic in England with Shawn Michaels, that Shawn clearly carried the match, and that Cena can't lead a match. Has he gotten to the point where now you watch him and you go, oh yeah, he's leading that match?
You know what, I haven't watched enough wrestling here lately to see John wrestle. I've seen other matches and stuff, but I haven't really seen, you know, John wrestle. So I can't comment on that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. I'll be aware of that, you know, next time I watch the show. I'll make a point to see, and hopefully next time I'm on the show we can discuss that. But I think he has probably gotten a lot better. He's had to have, you know. So, I don't know. The guy just – this is a lesson. Everybody that wants to aspire to be a professional wrestler, learn – John Cena is the classic example. He's the guy that you want to learn from because he has done everything right. You know, he has never gotten a lick of trouble, you know, the whole time he's been with the company. The guy has done everything right, you know, and so – that's why he is the guy on top, and he's always going to stay there. And you know, if somebody new comes in the locker room, go straight to John, pick his brain and talk to him and find out how he did it, because that you'll get your answers, what you need to know from him.
How does an average fan watching television who really wants to understand wrestling at a deeper level than the surface level, how would he or she watch a match and get an indication of who is leading a match? Describe what that means and how you might pick some clues out about who is the leader in the match.
Unless you're in the business, you'll never, you won't have an idea. You won't have a clue.
Yeah.
Because that's something that is taught. That's something that you learn along the way. You know, so I think your casual fan doesn't know anything. That's something that you can't explain to them.
Yeah.
You know, they would have to be in the moment. I think you would have to just sit down and say, hey, this is the way it works. You have an experienced guy leading a guy that's less experienced, you know. But a lot of times nowadays, it's both people helping each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not one person leading anymore.
Yeah.
You know, unless you just got somebody absolutely green as the grass in there, and then of course you're going to lead them. So, but now with the way the business is, because back in the day the heel always led the match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just the way it was. The babyface didn't say a word. The heel called everything. But you know, everything's evolved so much, and everything's changed so much that now both people can lead, you know, lead. You know, take for example, if I was in a match with Shawn Michaels, which I would dearly love because I've never had the opportunity to work with him, you know, because of his experience and my experience, you know, obviously I would let Shawn, you know, definitely take the lead as far as the match because Shawn's a great storyteller. So obviously I'm going to listen to him and let him lead me. But along the way, I can insert my ideas, my thoughts during that match. You know, I could suggest things during the match. Let's do this. Let's do this. You know, so, but if somebody was just absolutely green and had, you know, and is just learning, obviously that more experience leads the match. But, you know, in a case with Sean and I, both of us can make suggestions. But then I go back again. The reason I would let Sean take over is because he is such a great storyteller. And that's what you have to look at, too. Whoever you're working with, and you know by experience, let's just say, for example, I'm gonna work with Randy Orton tonight, okay? I know what Randy is capable of doing. I know what I'm capable of doing. Randy knows what I'm capable of doing. So, you know, both of us are going to call the match, not just one person. You know, same thing with Chris Jericho. You know, Chris Jericho is another good one. You know, he's a great storyteller. So obviously I'm going to say, okay, Chris, what do you want to do? Because Chris's mind for the business is just, you know, out of this world. And he's got such great ideas to tell a story. So I'm going to go off of Jericho first, you know, and I mean, I can tell a story, but see, I know the guys in the locker room. I've been around them enough. I know who the really good storytellers are. So that's how I base how I'm going to work my match and what I'm going to do, you know, and because I respect other guys so much who are really good, you know, I'll take their lead first and then insert my ideas and stuff like that. And then away we go. But, you know, getting back to this day and age, you know, experienced guys in there, they're both helping out each other.
Do you? I'll say this as a hook for people to buy your book, because you said when working out a match with Chris Jericho, there's one thing you got to watch out for when it comes to him. And I'll use that as a hook for people to buy the book, because it's a funny little.
But you know, it's not a knock against him. It's just because he is just so into what he is doing.
Yeah.
And and I love talking to Chris Jericho when we're going over a match. You can see his mind working. He's articulating. It's unbelievable working with Jericho, what an experience it is, and going over a match, because he's such a master at putting on good matches too. So
Bob Holly is our book. The Hardcore Truth is his new autobiography. It comes with the highest recommendation from PW Torch. Me and Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. Let's jump on the phone banks. We're down about 9 minutes here on the live portion of the show, and then we'll have a few minutes for VIP members afterwards. Let's go to 319 next and on deck 602. 319, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
This is Andrew from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Hey, Andrew. What have you got for Bob?
Yeah, the last time I called and I accidentally interrupted you because my phone was acting up. Get out of here.
Oh, that's okay.
All right, because you guys kind of sound mad, and I just kind of, yeah.
Oh, we're
Bob,
over it now.
Andrew, Andrew, Bob was fuming afterwards. He called me after the show. He said, who was that Andrew guy? He said Cedar Rapids. I'm going to find – no, go ahead.
No, Wade's fixing to get me in trouble now.
All right.
What's your question?
I got a question. You worked in a TNA event, I think Hardcore Justice, and you said in your shoot interview that if you saw Ken Anderson, you were going to, like, get in a fight with him. Did you ever see Ken Anderson at the TNA show? And if you did, how did you react to him when you first saw him again?
Well, when I first did that shoot interview, I wasn't in a very good place, number one. And number two, you know, they had already talked to Ken before I came down there, and he was okay with me coming. You know, the only thing, you know, there's no heat between me and Ken. The only thing is, you know, me and Ken just need to sit down and talk and so forth and, you know, figure out what went wrong, you know, because him and I were just such good friends, you know. So, and that's the only thing, because basically, I think I was more hurt than anything, because I'm not going to beat him up or nothing like that, by no means. You know, Ken and I we need to sit down and just talk, and you know, because we had such a good friendship, and I want to get back to that point again, because, you know, Ken's a good dude, and I talk about it in my book, you know, about, you know, wanting to talk to Ken and stuff like that. So one of these days, him and I are going to get to see each other. I didn't see him. Answer your question. No, I didn't see him. He wasn't down there at the time I was there, because I think his match was scheduled the next day or later on that night or whatever, and I was done earlier. So, but I mean, I was looking forward to seeing him, you know, and not a negative thing seeing him wise, but I, you know, cause you know, him and I were just really, really close. And I talk about that in my book, how close we were and stuff like that. So, but, as far as answering your question, no, I'm not gonna, you know, nothing like that is going to happen whatsoever.
Bob, there's,
yeah, I didn't think you're,
oh, go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
Thank you. I didn't think you were going to, like, get in a fight anyways, because it's like you're all grown men anyways. But, hey, we got
Twitter,
so you can be like, where you at, Ken?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have been nothing like that, no, huh? Actually, I was looking forward to seeing him, you know, to be honest with you. But, you know, he was on a different schedule than mine, so unfortunately we didn't get to see each other.
Bob, you talked about being in a bad place when you did the shoot interview, and there's in response to the interview that we did back on May 31st with you, I had some people, some wrestlers who had been around you going, I don't believe Bob. I think he's putting on an act. He's this Oshawks nice guy thing. Can't be the guy. Can't be him, because that's not the person I knew back when I knew him. What do you say to people like that? Because it sounds like some people look at you now and they're just like, that can't be the real Bob Holly based on the person that I ran across or experienced back in WWF. WWE.
Well, it's obvious they didn't get to know me then, you know. It's people that I didn't hang out with, because if you talk to guys, you know, like Billy Gunn, like talk to Al Snow, talk to guys like him, you know, guys that I hung out with and stuff like that, they would tell you a completely different story. And it's obvious these guys that say these things about me, you know, they don't like me for whatever reason, and I honestly don't care. And the point is, they definitely wouldn't say anything to me, because they would probably play Mr. Nice Guy if they did see me and then talk behind my back, you know, because there's a lot of spineless people out there like that, you know. So, you know, if most people have something to say, you know, I'm not hard to find. They can say it, you know, instead of going behind my back and saying stuff like that or saying whatever. But the thing is, it's obvious they don't know me. They haven't been around me that much, you know, and it's people that just don't like me for whatever reason, and not everybody's going to like me, and that's fine, you know, and so it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, but you had your days and you had your moods, and somebody who only saw those would have one impression of you.
Right, and you know, and granted, we go through a lot of stuff on the road, you know, personal issues and so forth, and not every day is going to be like a diamond, you know. Some days are diamonds and some are stone, you know, so not every day is going to be nice and rosy and you're going to be nice to everybody, you know. It's just not the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, everybody's got their opinions. They can have it. That's fine. You know, it's what it is. And all I can do is, you know, talk to the, you know,
talk to the people that have known me. You see, everybody sees how I am with other people on Twitter. You know, I don't talk bad about anybody. I'm always very grateful and thankful to other people. It is what it is. And if that's what people want to say, then that's fine. You know, it's because I know who I am, and that's all that matters.
Al Snow's the one who had the worst things to say about you, by the way. No, I'm kidding. I just put that up. All right. You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts. Let's go to 602, last caller of the day here. 602, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
All right, I'm David. I'm from Phoenix.
David, thanks for calling.
Hey, David.
What do you got for Bob?
Yeah.
Okay. I bought your book. I read it. I agreed with everything but one thing I wanted to, you know, ask you about.
Okay.
You know, about you talked about the Bret Hart Montreal screw job. And I don't know, I got the impression from reading your book that you thought that, you know, Bret was totally in the wrong. Now, what I was wondering is, you know, Vince McMahon and Bret Hart, they agreed to creative control. Bret had been working there 14 years. Shouldn't he have been able to decide how he wanted to leave? And I don't understand what the problem is with why couldn't he just do the job on the December paper? He was under contract through December. Why couldn't he drop the title in a four-way on the December pay-per-view? That was one time proposed.
Well, he was supposed to drop the title to Sean that night in Montreal. And he actually, Brett, you know. Go ahead, I'm sorry. What was that?
I mean, that Brett offered to drop it, you know, any other time. He didn't want to drop it to Sean in Montreal, but why couldn't he have – but he also proposed in December, you know, dropping it at the December pay-per-view and in a four-way with, I believe, Undertaker, Ken Shamrock, and Shawn Michaels. I mean, if he has creative control and Vince agreed to creative control, why wasn't Brett allowed to, you know, have the terms that he agreed upon? I mean,
that I couldn't answer that question, honestly. But it always goes back to it's, you know, Vince's company. It's what Vince wants. You know, Vince is the one who pays him. You know, granted, yeah, if he has creative control, but see, the thing is, when it comes to the tie of the world title, you know, it's always been in professional wrestling, when you leave a company, you do the right thing and you drop the title. And for whatever reason, he didn't want to drop it to Sean. I have, you know, it's because there was heat between them two, and from what I understand, Brett said that he didn't think Sean had any respect for him and vice versa or whatever. But, you know, it's always been in professional wrestling, you know, when you leave a company, the right thing to do is drop the title, no matter who it is, and be done with it, you know. But as far as your question, if Brett had creative control, the only thing I can say is it's Vince's company and Vince can do, you know, it's Vince pays him. And so that's the only thing that I can think of, you know. So, but it's just always been in professional wrestling, you know, you give back to the boys that put you over and, you know, just do the right thing and you know, do the job. And that's, you know.
Hey, Bob, and that's what Vince will. Would you say the locker room, the majority of the locker room, sided with Vince or Brett at the time that happened, or was everyone just kind of almost too scared to talk about it except in their inner circle of closest friends?
I think everybody really never wanted to comment on it because, honestly, at the time, nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, so nobody really, you know, gave their thoughts on it, you know, and just, you know, that's just one of those things where it's, you know, ultimately, it's Vince's company, you know, and that's just what it boils down to.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just think, you know, Brett didn't like Sean. It's obviously they didn't like each other, and I think a lot of that had to do with
with the whole thing with dropping the belt that night, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. All right, Bob, I know our time's limited with you. I want to have a few minutes that's for VIP members only to reward them for their support for what we do here. So
okay.
Let me transition out of the live cast here. Thanks to our callers and those who have emailed. We'll do more emails here in the VIP after show with our remaining minutes with Bob. If you aren't VIP, you can get information on going VIP at pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. Tons and tons of benefits come with the membership. Get rave reviews all the time from livecast listeners who have made the move. Give us a try, and I think you'll be glad that you did. It'll be money well spent, and we appreciate it very much. Don't forget, tune in on Monday. Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant will be by with a livecast live in the hour leading up to Raw. I'll be by voice, if my voice is willing, on Tuesday with Jason Powell to talk about Monday's Raw, the final Raw before SummerSlam. And we appreciate everybody for joining us. Keep spreading the word. And as always, you can find us live or on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. Bob Holly, again, thanks. The book is The Hardcore Truth. It is available to buy as an ebook or a hard copy. Look it up online or at your local bookstore. And you can follow Bob Holly at The Bob Holly. Any closing words for our freeloading audience, as we call them affectionately, Bob?
I just want to tell everybody thank you. You know, I want to thank everybody for their support. I especially want to thank you, Wade, and Bruce for having me again for the second time on your show, and I really appreciate it. And you know, and follow me on, you know, on Twitter at the Bob Holly. And like I said, whether you guys like me or you hate me out there, I appreciate you all. You know, you guys are what makes the world go round, and I thank you.
Awesome. Bob, thanks for your time. And VIP members, stay tuned. We're going to talk to Bob about his thoughts on the Ultimate Warrior as a worker. I'm kind of curious what he thinks of that. And also, what was Randy Savage really like behind the scenes? And what about Ric Flair made him a great worker? Because Bob wrote about his match with him in his book, and I want to talk to him about that too. So those are three subjects I want to touch on quickly with Bob, and maybe Bruce has something cool too. So we'll talk to you on the other side of the music. All right, we're not going to waste much time with music today because we want to have as much time with you for a few minutes here in the VIP After Show, Bob. Ultimate Warrior, he's back in the news because he signed a video game deal with a WWE partner.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
And he said, and Vince McMahon said some, you know, nice things. It's nice to have him back in the fold. What did you know about and think about Ultimate Warrior as a worker?
Oh, gosh. You know, I was only around him very, very little, you know. Yeah. He wasn't very outgoing, of course, because when he came back, when I was there, I think a lot of the guys in his day weren't there anymore. Most of them were on their way out or whatever. So, you know, he kind of kept to himself a lot. I mean, he was nice to me. You know, he spoke, said hi, and, you know, shook my hand stuff on the times I did see him, but I never really got to talk to him and, you know, pick his brain or get to know him or anything like that, you know? So, I honestly felt like he just wasn't happy being there for whatever reason, you know? So I kind of just steered clear of him. I didn't want to get in his space and, you know, cause he just didn't seem like he wanted to be bothered or anything like that. And so I respected his space. And so, but as far as his work, I think it was one of those things where it didn't matter if he couldn't work or not. The thing with him is he had so much charisma, and there was just something really unique about his character. And I mean, a lot of people make fun of his promos and stuff like that, but you got to admit, everybody got into what he said. They may not have understood what he said, but you know, everybody got into it. Even I did. You know, I'd catch myself glued to the TV watching this guy, and there was just something about his persona and his character that drew to everybody, you know, and so it didn't matter whether he could work or not. It was all about his, what's that word I'm looking for? His persona, you know, who he was in the ring. You know, because you only saw him for, what, 3 or 4 minutes, something like that, unless he had, you know, a big match or whatever, you know. But it worked. It worked for him, so he didn't have to be a great worker. you know, and to, I think to this day, if they did bring him back, it would still, you know, for him, I don't think you could pull it off with anybody else, because you have to know how to work these days. And, but I think people would still buy into his character, you know, to this day, because there's just, it's the charisma, it's the energy the guy had, you know. So, and like I said, on a personal level, I didn't get to know him, but I still found the guy very interesting to watch on TV, regardless of how good he was in the ring or not, because he was interesting to watch. And that's, you know, and you just had to have that, you had to have that ability to captivate the people regardless of whether you could work or not. And he did that.
Do you remember anybody else that you came across behind the scenes who seemed as disconnected from his colleagues and from wanting to be there, even when he was making good money and on top, and as unappreciative perhaps of what he had that so many people wanted? And it's not that Warrior didn't work territories. I mean, he was in world class for years, and, you know, it's not like he, you know, just went through developmental for 3 months and got plopped in main events. But still, was there anybody else who compares to him in terms of not having that respect and rapport with colleagues?
Honestly, I can't think of anybody, really. I really can't. You know, this, you know, and for a lot of people that don't know, he, you know, like you said, Wade, he did work territories and stuff, and so he did learn the business, you know, but it's just, he was just one of those unique individuals that didn't have to know how to work.
Yeah.
You know, and he got by just on his charisma and his look, and it worked for him. And that's very rare, you know, especially in the wrestling business, very rare for you to be able to get by on just that. You know, so there was some kind of magic about him.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Bob, you mentioned in your book, Randy Savage, that you bonded with him, but you wrote in your book that he wasn't a great worker, that he was a good worker. Obviously, he's heads and shoulders above Ultimate Warrior by far, and among the elite as, you know, natural athletes and good workers during his era in the WWF. But talk about what kept him from being a great worker, and maybe talk about him on a personal level a little bit too.
You know, Randy was one of those guys where in the locker room you gravitated towards him because he was fun to be around. You know, he was fun to talk to. He always had interesting things to say. You know, and he was really nice to me too. You know, he took to me for whatever reason, you know, and I'll never forget that. And that's, Randy was always always so nice to me and eager to help me, you know, and it's like, you know, because he came to me and said, hey, if you ever need anything, got any questions, just let me know. And so I did. I went to him a lot, you know, and him and Rick Martel taught me the ropes. You know, they taught me what to do and what not to do, you know, in the locker room and stuff. And don't get me wrong. When I say, you know, when I talk about somebody being a great worker or not such a great worker, mind you, I'm comparing a lot of people to Shawn Michaels, you know, because Shawn was one of the best, if not the best, you know. So that's how I base a lot of, you know, the way people work. I compare them to Shawn because Shawn is, to me, you know, the guy that you need to learn from as far as working and telling stories.
I know you weren't around Ric Flair during his prime, but you got to work with him and were very complimentary of him in your book. How does Ric Flair, from observing it as an experienced wrestler and seeing some of Ric's greatest matches and some of Shawn's greatest matches, and having been in the ring with Ric, compare the two and expand a little bit on what it was like to be in the ring with Ric compared to some others. What made you notice right away as somebody sharing the ring with him that he was a great?
Just how smooth he was. You know, everything was just effortless. When I was in the ring with – that first time I was in the ring with Ric Flair, and actually the only time, mind you, I was nervous as hell, of course, because of who he was. But he was just so smooth, and it was just like he was calling stuff before we even got to the point where we had to start doing it. You know, he was just so – he was like a step ahead, every step ahead. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't even tell he was talking to me. You know, he was just, you know, Rick was just really, really smooth. And, you know, he was a great athlete too, you know, so. But, you know, when I compare workers and stuff like that, I'm comparing a lot of workers, you know, like Ric Flair, he was great back in his day. He was one of the greatest, you know. So when I compare workers is how good they are, you know, I'm comparing them to guys like Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, you know. Yeah. So I don't want people to be like, oh, what make, you know, why is he only just great, you know. When I'm going off of, because I've been around guys that are great workers and so that's how I kind of rate people. I go off of Sean. Sean's my, you know, my meter as far as how good people are. So
understandable.
You know,
though, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not everybody is going to be great athletes. And that's the beauty of our business, is everybody's different. You know, everybody has something different to bring to the table. You know, Ric Flair, the guy is smooth in the ring. He knows what he's doing. The guy can talk. You know, back in the day, he looked great. You know, he had everything, and you know, and it's the same with Shawn Michaels. The guys like them, they had it all, you know. And so,
Bob, do you have Hunter above or below Savage as a worker, or are they kind of in the same category? Because you're really complimentary of Hunter in your book.
I think Hunter is right up there, you know, close to Shawn and Ric Flair. I mean, Hunter's a great worker.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, and mind you too. And because you take guys like, you know, Hunter, and then you have somebody like Randy Savage, the eras are completely different as far as workers. Because look at the workers today. A lot of the workers today are a lot better than the workers we had in the Attitude Era. You know, so it's almost like generations evolve as far as workers. You know, so, you know, Randy Savage, I think back in his day, in his time, yeah, okay, maybe, yeah, he was a great worker. But I think, and a lot of times when people ask me, you know, how good of a worker is this guy or this guy, I think what I'm doing is I'm comparing them to, like, today's athlete, you know. So, and that's not fair, because maybe back in Randy's era, he was a great worker amongst his peers, you know. And so I think that's where, you know, people are misunderstanding me. As far as why is he just saying Randy's a good worker and he's not great, you know,
yeah.
I think I want to take that back and say, yeah, for his era, he was a great worker.
Yeah.
You know, so I think maybe that, hopefully that'll clear a little bit of why I say what I say as far as how people, you know, I perceive them as workers and stuff like that.
Bruce, are you still with us before we go? Do you want to jump in with the subject?
Yeah. I spent early in your book, you talked about the wrestler that really got you interested in pro wrestling, and I was at the Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest in Charlotte this weekend, and as it happened, I spent a lot of time watching footage of this guy. I've never seen anybody that anchored a wrestling company the way Buddy Rose did Portland Wrestling. I mean, it really came home for me this weekend. So, can you talk about Playboy Buddy Rose, the fat guy that could move, and your impressions of him, and why he hooked you into pro wrestling?
Yeah, the Playboy Buddy Rose, he was the first time I ever saw him. You know, mind you, the first wrestling I ever saw was Big Time Wrestling out of Sacramento. You know, and that's where I saw Pat Patterson, Rocky Maivia, Bob Roop, guys like that. And then, you know, when I was in Oregon, I saw Portland Wrestling, and here comes this guy. They call him Playboy Buddy Rose. You know, and so I was already hooked on wrestling, and it just – what stood out about him more than anybody else was, here's this guy. I mean, he wasn't terribly fat back then, but he wasn't built. He didn't have a great physique, you know. So, but the guy could move. The guy could talk. I hated his guts when I first time I saw him on TV. You know, he stood out from everybody else. I think that's why I gravitated to him the most. And I idolized him the most, because he stood out to me because of his character, because of how he portrayed himself. And just, he, you know, back in his day, I thought he was a great worker back in his day for his era. You know, he was one of the best, and rightfully so. And the guy, he was a draw. You know, he drew good houses and stuff like that. And he was their top guy for so many years. But it was just his charisma and his promos. I think his promos is what really hooked me, you know, as far as being interested in Playboy Buddy Rose. I mean, he was just, you know, if people can go on YouTube and look up Portland Wrestling and put in Playboy Buddy Rose, they'll see what I'm talking about, because he was one of the best as far as cutting promos. He was really good at telling a story in his promo. And you know, so that's how I got hooked on him.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis. Yeah, I saw it. I mean, he really did stand out from the rest of the folks there, and he was so he was so flexible. He could do just about anything. And he had that natural heat of, I can't believe that this fat bastard can do that. And you wanted to see him get his ass kicked, but it didn't quite happen that way. And then he was, you know, the braggart of being the playboy, and then you'd look at him and go, how's that guy a playboy? And it was both natural and really well thought out stuff. I mean, Buddy Rose, particularly in Portland, I thought was a standout performer.
Oh, he was.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, he was terrific. The heat that he can generate just by opening his mouth was unbelievable. Because I honestly despised the guy when I was a kid. I hated him, you know. But he was my favorite on there, despite not liking him. And it's just because he was so good.
Yeah, he had that it factor in a way that was just unconventional, but absolutely worked. You know, unconventional by today's standards, not by his day standards.
Right. You know, and if people want to learn how to cut a promo, you know, like I said, YouTube Buddy Rose and listen to his promos. You know, because you know he was one of the best. You know, yeah. I know the Rock throws out great promos, but let me tell you something, Buddy Rose, he hits them home every single time. You know, he's good. He is really good.
I'm glad, Bruce, you brought him up, and I'm glad you wrote about him, Bob, because I saw him in AWA, and he was really good friends with Mick Karsh, who's a friend of the Torch and has been on the show, a wrestling announcer who's been everywhere but WWE. I think Buddy Rose, Bruce, would probably go down, it depends on the standard you're using, as one of the more underrated wrestlers as history moves on.
Yeah, I think so. I completely agree, because I think I think a lot of it was, too, Vince really didn't like fat guys. Yeah. From what I understand, from what I've heard, you know, and that when Buddy Rose was in WWE, I think he was just trying to, you know, they were doing that blow away diet, and it was just a novelty. And, you know, so I think Buddy could have been a lot more than what he really was in WWE, because he was good. He just, yeah. You know, so.
Bob, I know we probably kept you beyond what your schedule allows. So thank you once again for being on. I hope you'll come back again. I've saved the questions I didn't get to. We've got some good emails, too, that I'll mark down and save for next time that you can be on the show, because you're a great guest, and it has been an absolute pleasure again.
Okay, well, man, thank you, Wade. I really appreciate it. And I know sometimes I ramble on, and I get a loss for words here and there, and I apologize for that. You know, so, you know, but I'm just very grateful for you guys to have me on the show, and I really am, and thank you, Bruce. I appreciate it a lot, because, again, I've said it before, without you guys, I'm nothing, and to get my book out there and get my word out there, for people to get to know me, you know, without you, it's impossible. So, and for that, I'm very grateful, and I thank you guys.
Well, we had some great email compliments for your book. I'll save them for next time, but nobody emailed us, Bob, and said, you know, you recommended that book and you built it up and I was let down. So you're making us look good, too, in that respect.
Well, good. Like I said, I'm forever grateful to you guys for pushing my book. I really, really am.
And it's The Hardcore Diaries. No, I'm kidding. The Hardcore Truth by Bob Holly.
Man.
Yeah.
Bruce was probably sitting there for a second going, no way. And I was like, oh, thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, VIP members, for joining us. Until next time with Bob Holly, this is Wade Keller signing off.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Progress Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.